This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo, episode 42. Coming up on today's show, Puerto Rico on fire, and the medium is the message. All that and more on the way on Still Standing.
No talking points, no spin. It's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Hello and welcome to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. I'm Michael Caputo. I guess you probably already know that. I really appreciate you listening in to my podcast. We do this every week. You can check us out at stillstandingpodcast.com, where you can subscribe, and you can also give us 5 stars over at iTunes. That'd be a real big help. We enjoy doing this. Me and my producer, Sean Dwyer, whose patience with me I truly appreciate. So, it's been a crazy week for you. I know it's been a crazy week for all of us, but it's been particularly crazy for me, and I'll tell you why. My wife and children and I had decided that it was time for us to take a little bit of a break. Every time I go on national television, I end up getting threats. In fact, just this week, this one of the people who threatened violence and death against my family was on trial in Buffalo, New York, or in Orchard Park, New York, to be absolutely precise. You know, I've actually had several people arrested for their threats against my family. And I can tell you that it really tunes up. It really moves forward. It really, the volume of these things really goes past 10 to 11, perhaps even, every time I go on television, especially if I go on CNN or MSNBC. It appears that that's where the nut jobs really gather. So my wife asked me to take a break from that, take a break from television. You know, I wasn't getting paid for it anyway, and I'm not quite sure even if it's appreciated. I spend most of my time, almost all of my time on television defending the President of the United States, someone I support 110%. But, you know, there are people besides myself on CNN in particular that are paid to do that. And they were calling me in as a guest couple, 3 nights a week. I really enjoy doing Fox. That I would say is my favorite, especially Tucker Carlson. I really enjoy doing Tucker's show. Tucker's a great guy, an old deadhead just like myself. But we needed a break. You know, this has been a long 2 years for my family, especially for my wife, who in the very beginning asked me not to join the Trump campaign, even though she likes President Trump and really likes the First Lady. Back in 2015, when I was asked to be the New York State director by the Trump campaign, she begged me not to get involved. She said, "This can't end well." I was, you know, entertained by that, of course. My wife and I met on a campaign in Ukraine, a parliamentary campaign. And even though we won, or perhaps because we won, our campaign manager was murdered, shot several times in the chest in front of his children on the street outside of Kiev. And, you know, my wife has, of course, very bad memories of that, bad taste in her mouth about politics in general. When she said, "Please don't do it, it's not going to end well," I said, "Really? Come on. What could actually happen? This is America. It's not Ukraine. This is the most advanced democracy in the world. Nothing can happen." Well, how wrong was I? Soon after the campaign started, I'm sure the FBI started spying on us. And as soon as Hillary Clinton's campaign got wind of the fact that she was going to be running in the general election against Donald Trump, the spying intensified. These deep state actors, I used to laugh whenever Roger Stone would say deep state. And I thought that was funny, you know, how in the United States, land of the free and the home of the brave, could people, bad actors deep in the government, do things so terribly wrong. But now, after being through the Trump campaign and everything involved, I know that there is indeed a deep state. And you know it. you know it as well. If you're listening to this, you're interested in politics. And, well, anybody interested in politics, whether you want to admit it or not, you know that the national security apparatus was weaponized against the Trump campaign by the Obama White House. And it's going to be proven. We all know it will be. If not, if it isn't proven, then we know that the system is indeed broken. But my wife and I have been through a lot. My children have been through a lot. My teenager, God love her, you know, she took it hard. Of course, teenagers take everything hard. But to watch your family tortured because of, you know, innocently being involved in a presidential campaign, you know, she didn't really even know what to think. We've really been through the ringer. So my wife and I decided that this summer we were going to try and do something different. You know, my public relations firm, it's called Zeppelin Communications, we took a hit during the investigation. In fact, our company basically was destroyed. We had to lay our people off. We had to close offices. We had to basically bolt the hatches down to try to survive the storm. And we did. You know, my partner and I were, you know, signing clients up again and moving forward, trying to recover. We went in deep, deep debt. And of course, our family, our savings was completely wiped out. So back to the topic, I keep going back on that. My wife and I decided that we were going to just take a break, go someplace else, get out of the Buffalo area. I mean, like I said, you know, some of the threats, the most serious threats against our family came from the leftists of Buffalo. You know, leftists are the same everywhere, but when they're local, when the threats are coming local, they're easily followed through, right? You know, somebody, you know, the guy who threatened me, he was the fifth that I was able to arrest. He was an LGBT activist. That acronym keeps changing. I have to check and make sure I'm using the right letters. An LGBT activist and the director of a school in Buffalo, interestingly enough, a culinary institute. You know, you would think that someone would be responsible if they were employed like that, but this guy decided he was going to threaten me. You know, I took a look at him online. I'd take care of him about 3 seconds if he came after me, but I figured I should still try to prosecute. And with all these threats flowing in the Buffalo area, we have a very active radical leftist group in Buffalo. It's, you know, pretty typical urban area. These lowlifes tend to congregate in cities where they can get free things. The democratic socialists and such, you know. We decided to go, you know, to leave. Just for the summer. Last summer, we went to South Florida for a month. It was a lot of fun. South Florida in the summer, hot, right? But it was fun. So, you know, I have been looking for clients that I could enjoy working with, clients that I could, you know, feel positive about working for. And I had taken a position or taken a client with the Hurricane Maria Survivors Fund in the island of Puerto Rico. If you know much about what happened in Hurricane Maria, the fact of the matter is that FEMA did a pretty good job. In fact, they did more after Hurricane Maria in the island of Puerto Rico than they've ever done before. I mean, typically they bring, for example, the aid to the island or the aid to, you know, whatever, the hurricane-ravaged area. They drop it off and the local government will deliver it. Well, not in the island of Puerto Rico. The government, the local government, completely collapsed. There was nothing. They could deliver nothing. So FEMA actually had to not only provide aid, but they had to deliver it locally, something they'd never done. And the FEMA did a pretty good job. The problem, really, if you want to take a closer look at it like I did, is that the insurance companies who insured people against, storms, typically the wind, private insurance companies don't insure against flood. They insure against wind. You know, when you're like, for example, after Hurricane Sandy, I got involved with the Hurricane Sandy victims. And the insurance companies weren't the problem there. It was FEMA. And FEMA was offering about 40 cents on the dollar, which is a highway robbery. When it comes to damages, people would put in their damage claims. And FEMA would be 35, 40 cents on the dollar. And, you know, that's it. To people who've been, you know, paying their premiums. This is money that they were owed. This is money they deserved. And, you know, down in Puerto Rico, it's even worse. The private insurance companies here are offering something like 7 cents on the dollar. 7 cents on the dollar, which is, you know, you should go to jail for that kind of thing. The fact of the matter is Puerto Rico is a commonwealth of the United States, but none of the financial institutions here are American. None of them are from the mainland, especially insurance companies. The insurance companies are typically from Spain. And so the Spanish corporation, the Spanish insurance companies basically said, you know, screw these people. And they're offering 7 cents on the dollar. So I've been asked to come to Puerto Rico to help them fight that. With the two-year anniversary of the storm coming up on September 20th, the fight with the insurance companies for what these people truly deserve is just beginning. So my wife and I decided to take our children down to Puerto Rico for me to do work with the survivors of the storm, and my children, my wife and kids, to relax on the beach and, you know, go to the pool while I'm working for the survivors. What a relaxing thing that would be. Maybe hot, you know, but what could go wrong with that, right? Of all places in the world, Puerto Rico was going to be peaceful. Surprise! So we've been down here for a couple of weeks now, and the whole shit house is going up in flames, as Jim Morrison would say. The whole place is going up in flames. I don't know if you're following this, but it's an interesting parallel to the politics of the mainland. And I wanted to talk about that because here we are, the governor of Puerto Rico, who was, you know, relatively anti-Trump, not the mayor. The mayor, who hates Donald Trump, is actually hated by most people on the island. She doesn't do anything. And even people in her own party hate her. Unfortunately, she was the leading voice in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. And, well, you saw what she did. She's a terrible person. But the governor was in a long chat with a group of his closest advisors. I guess the chats, when printed out, were like almost 1,000 pages. And in this chat, they were saying all kinds of things about people, about the victims of Hurricane Maria, the dead, cynical, insulting. I mean, I think they homophobic slur against Ricky Martin. I don't know if it's a slur, but yeah, a homophobic talk about her, Ricky Martin. I haven't read it. I don't know what that comment was. And also talking about, I think, jokingly, holding back on the FEMA aid so they could blame Donald Trump. This went on and on and on and on in a group of a dozen or so people on a chat. And somebody on that chat got fired and printed out all the pages of all the insulting rhetoric, all the talk of giving contracts to their friends, and gave it to the media. And this place went up in flames. It happened as we arrived, actually, you know, soon after we arrived. Apparently, this long-running chat was already under investigation and had been, you know, was being examined by authorities, the local justice department, which is, you know, locals don't really believe there's much justice in it. But, you know, one of the people who was, you know, on the chat got fired and released it to the media, and everybody went nuts. In the first couple of days, there were large protests, but it grew. It grew to the point of just a couple of days ago, there was well over 100. Some people say 200,000. The left is saying 500,000. It's the biggest protest, no doubt, since the left and the communists of Puerto Rico organized protests to toss the United States Navy out of here. Of course, after the Navy left, the economy tanked. Because that's what happens when you kick out your biggest industry. Well, your second biggest industry. You know, tourism is pretty big here. At least it was before Hurricane Maria. So fast forward a bit, the left, the pro-independence party, the communists, the socialists, and by the way, agents of Cuba. That's a real problem here in Puerto Rico. Cuba is pretty close by, the next island over. And, you know, Cuba has always messed in the politics of Puerto Rico, always. And it was the communists, you know, the Cuban operatives who led the protests against the United States Navy. United States Navy left. So, you know, the governor, Ricky Rossello, or Ricky, they call him. That's not a diminutive. It's not an insult. People just call him Ricky. Ricky has a lot of explaining to do. I don't really take a position on this. I'm not from Puerto Rico. I have nothing bad to say about Rick Rossello. I don't have anything really bad to say about any of this. I hope that they resolve this issue without violence, but violence is coming. And here we are, my wife and kids and myself, living in a kind of modest condo on the beach. You know, Puerto Rico is still a mess. It's a mess. 2 years later, there are people who still don't have electricity. Now, the condo we're living in, you know, we have electricity. It goes out once in a while. It went out last night, but we have a generator. But good luck with the internet, right? Good luck. And by the way, crime is rampant on the island. Always has been a problem, but the drug situation here, the narco traffickers, have really taken over. A lot of the police left after Hurricane Maria because they discovered that they were perfectly welcome to move to New York City and Philadelphia and make three times the money they were making here fighting narco terrorists, right? So crime is a problem. In fact, if you live, if you go to a San Juan, for example, you better stay in a hotel on Condado, which is the central area, the central tourist area in the beach of San Juan. And the minute you walk away from Condado, you better not walk away. You better not walk down the street or down the beach at night because, you know, for sure, you're seeing this happen all the time. People are being carjacked. People are being grabbed. Women are being raped. It's, you know, it's getting better, but it is not safe in Puerto Rico off of the tourist strip of Condado. We live on the edge of Condado. In fact, where we are, it's not all that safe. It's safe, I guess, you know. But I'm trying to make the best of it. I'm working with the Hurricane Maria Survivors Fund. We've got a plan to fight the insurance companies. And at the same time, I'm writing a book. I've signed a contract to write a book. There'll probably be more news about it soon. But it's a hard thing to do, writing a book. That's tough. It's a lot of work. It's 80,000 words. And so I set up one of the bedrooms here as my office, and I'm trying to write in the early mornings and in the late evenings while I work during the day. It's not working out all that well, frankly. I'm going to need more time, probably. But at the same time, you know, I'm working closely with my agent, Jim Hornfisher. He's actually a listener of the podcast. Hey, Jim, good guy, great guy, teaching me how to tell a story in writing. So I wake up in the morning here at 5 o'clock, believe it or not, and go for a walk on the beach. I'm trying to lose some weight, trying to get in shape, trying to get my mind right to write. I wake up, I do 3 miles on the beach. And when I first started, you know, it's beautiful. Puerto Rico's beaches are gorgeous. And there is there are palm beaches along the, palm trees along the beach. It's big, huge, deep, long beaches. I think it's about 100 yards from the grass to the water. A really beautiful area. Down at the end, I do this walk, and I've been watching as a palm tree at the end of the beach, where it comes to a rocky outcropping that, you know, you can't walk beyond, especially if you're not wearing shoes like myself. This palm tree has been slowly falling into the water, you know, tilting, you know, leaning toward the water as the surf comes in and beats away at the sand around it. it's leaning more and more. And I've been watching it kind of teetering there, just like I've been watching this government here teetering. You know, the other day, there were rubber bullets fired into the crowd. Someone in the crowd was throwing fireworks at the police. The police had had it. They fired rubber bullets and tear gas, dispersed the crowd. You know, these people, Ricky Martin and this guy named Bad Bunny, I guess he's some kind of a rapper or something like that, some reggaeton artist, and the actor or Benicio del Toro, they were here speaking to the crowd. Of course, that increased the numbers of the crowd. What Ricky Martin and Benicio del Toro and Bad Bunny don't understand is that in the crowd, everything's being organized by socialists and communists. And here's the thing that I noticed. The vast majority of the people are peaceful in these protests. And then you have a hardcore kind of like Antifa who are there to cause trouble. They're prying up the bricks on the streets of Old San Juan and throwing them at the police. They're arriving with fireworks to throw at the police. They want a war. They want the government to topple. In fact, they attacked a police precinct and stole all the weapons. So now the communists, the Cubans, you know, the union organizers, they all seem to get along just fine, right? They've got guns. Yep, they've got guns now. And if you remember, I don't know, when the revolutionaries get the guns, that's when things really go wrong. The police, of course, have not been killing anyone, but on the wall in the police precinct, there was some kind of spray-painted message, according to people I've talked to here, threatening the life of the governor. So the governor, Ricky Rossello, you know, pretty well-liked, pretty young, by the way, who unfortunately surrounded himself with young people who were snotty in a chat. Rossello has to worry about his life. Now, there's also, by the way, corruption involved. It appears there have been some aides to the governor, former aides to the governor, arrested. Millions of dollars stolen. I mean, millions. And this is a nation that can't keep the lights on. The traffic lights on the island are still not working. The traffic lights. Now, luckily, the people of Puerto Rico were kind-hearted souls and mostly really nice folks. They tend to stop for pedestrians and wait their turn at stoplights that are broken. But then, in the midst of them, you have these radicals. You have, well, I guess the island equivalent of Antifa. Let's face it, it's hot here. 86, 87 degrees, a bit of a sea breeze, but it's hot. I wear a suit every day and I sweat through it. And there's just no way Antifa is going to wear black here. They'd melt. That's why the protests start at 5 p.m. because the sun is already low in the sky and the temperature is going down. But wearing black, that isn't going to happen, right? But they are wearing masks. They're wearing handkerchiefs over their face. And the shit has hit the fan, ladies and gentlemen. Now, around 200,000 people the other day. Now, they're having a protest today, Friday. This is a union protest. They say it's going to be peaceful. But on Monday, they're going to shut down the highways that enter into the city of San Juan. They're going to shut down the highway. They're going to gather hundreds of thousands of protesters on the highway and just block traffic. Now, if that sounds like Portland to you, it's Portland, but with real numbers. You know, in Portland, Antifa is in control of the traffic in Portland at times. And here in San Juan, the protesters are going to be blocking the city on Monday. It is an absolute shit show. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I don't consider Puerto Rico to be ungovernable. You know, they're so sick and tired, the people of Puerto Rico, kind-hearted souls that they are. They're tired of all the corruption. It's been going on for years. In fact, the governor, he's the son of a previous governor who was run out because of corruption in his administration. Now, nobody's accusing the governor himself of being corrupt. I don't think anybody accused his father of being corrupt. But people around him stole money, just flat stole money from the Department of Education, which is one of the sources of federal funds, and other places. Just flat stole money. In fact, they've arrested the head of the former head of the Department of Education here in Puerto Rico and the head of Health and Human Services here, which is the other pot of federal money that they get from the United States. These accounts, these millions and millions of dollars that come to the island from the United States are just too tempting for the scumbags, right? So they rip it off, and the communists take advantage of the attitudes of the normal people and organize them. It's really going to hell fast. Every day I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I go outside. And I do my 3-4 miles on the beach. And every day I get to the end of the beach, to the rocky point. And I see little by little that palm tree is falling. I'm watching it every day. And today I went out for my walk and I noticed that the palm tree is in the water. It's done. It's over. And I really believe it's over for the government of Ricky Rossello. I don't know that it should be. It's interesting because he's being run out for bad language, for intemperate comments, for nastiness on a chat. And our president, you know, he's being blamed for intemperate comments and nasty things. I mean, look at the overreaction to him, those tweets about those women who call themselves the squad in the House of Representatives. I remember when I was a kid, the old saying, America, love it or leave it. Now, the president put a few more barbs into that, but he basically said, America, love it or leave it, ladies. And, of course, the hand-wringing began. He doesn't apologize. He stands up for himself. You know, perhaps, you know, more temperate remarks would be the better way to go, but the president is in the office to fight, not to pleasure the left. Ricky Rossello, however, has already apologized profusely for what he said in those chats. He will not stand up like the president of the United States, which tells me, that this guy, like the palm tree, like that palm tree at the end of the beach, is about to fall. Yeah, and I'm here with my family right in the middle of it all, trying to write a book, trying to work for the Hurricane Maria Survivors Fund. Maybe you'll hear more about that as the anniversary of the storm is also the end. The 2-year anniversary is the end of the survivors' ability to file damage claims. These insurance companies have really ripped these people off. And in that crowd of 200,000, I think there's going to be truly 500,000 on Monday. There are probably half of them have been completely ripped off blind by these Spanish insurance companies like MAPFRE. Have any ever talked to anybody who works for MAPFRE? Punch them in the nose for me. There's some scum, the way they're ripping these poor people off. But I'm going to be here trying to change that a little bit and watching from afar because my wife and kids and I are staying the hell out of Old San Juan where all of this is going down. Unfortunately for Puerto Rico, that's also where the cruise ship docks are. So the cruise ships are just passing Puerto Rico by. They're going to the Virgin Islands instead. And of course, that means tourism dips by half and even more. And the economy suffers. and the vicious cycle continues, and the palm tree drops deeper into the water. It's crazy. Let me take a break here real quick. I'll be right back after these messages. Remember, stillstandingpodcast.com. Sign up, subscribe, and even throw a five-star rating over on iTunes. I'd appreciate it. Michael Caputo for Still Standing. We'll be right back after this. Still standing.
Please remain standing. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. Thanks a lot for sticking around. You can donate to support us at patreon.com like our executive producers, John Seifert, Henry Wotazek, Sonia Carlin, Susan Havey, Darcy Swenson, George Noonan, Thomas Fulton. Thanks, Tom. I really appreciate your support. Stephen Flaminio, Daniel Markey, Jack Bromwich, Jordan Gostomsky. These are all executive producers, people who back us on Patreon.com, including Brian Pesdersky, Susan Stevens, Patty Freeling, Bill Grant, Greg Mumbach, my old pal, Mark Berry, Gary Stokes, and then Julie, Rachel, and Samantha Lynn. All folks who back us up, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your subscription to Still Standing at patreon.com. It means a lot to us. I can promise you, we'll keep moving. So I got to tell you, this Puerto Rico stuff is compelling, but at the same time, maddening. You know, you really want to wish the best for the people of Puerto Rico, and they're so sweet. They're very nice. The people, they really want you to have a great, you know, experience here. They don't want you to have a bad experience. So they warn you against, going out at night and things like that. And it's sad that they have to have these warnings. Anyway. But I got to warn you. I think we all know the media has gone completely mad. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I pulled myself off TV. I was watching, you know, I'm actually keeping the TV off here in Puerto Rico. I don't really want to be a part of this debate anymore, to be a part of this discussion. I can't help myself once in a while to go back and look at some of the segments on YouTube. One in particular struck me the other day when my friend Steve Cortez was on Anderson Cooper. He was on with this character, Wajahat Ali, who writes for the New York Times. He's also a CNN contributor like Steve Cortez, both paid to fight, apparently. And Steve, whose family is Latin American, you know, he's a very strong supporter of the president, came under fire from not just this guy, Ali, but also from Anderson Cooper, who, you know, it may curl your toes a little bit, but I like Anderson Cooper a lot. I think he's a great guy. He's always been, you know, polite to me. I find him to be, you know, intellectually honest. He's liberal. Most of my friends are liberal. As someone who's followed the Grateful Dead most of my life, most of my friends are liberal. But Steve got beat up by both Anderson and this guy, Ali. It was remarkable to me. The topic, of course, was the president's tweets, which is, you know, the left has been hand-wringing about for 5 days now. The president's tweets that Ilhan Omar and her squad should go back from whence they came. The modern-day version of America, love it or leave it. And, of course, three out of the four people, the four women in that squad, were born in the United States. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez comes to mind. Rashida Tlaib, who is about as disgusting as they come. It's unfortunate that the choice of words, but, you know, look, the president was right in the fact that these women hate America. They just do. I think it was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez who said America is garbage. And Ilhan Omar cannot stop herself from crapping all over the country that saved her from a terrible fate in Somalia. But Steve got beat up. And it was funny. It wasn't funny. It was remarkable because unfortunately, Anderson couldn't stop mocking Steve, just smirking at him and mocking. And Ali did the same thing. They're just mocking him. First of all, it's, you know, Steve has written about it, in fact, in Real Clear Politics, in an interesting article called The Left's Broad Bigoted Politics of Vilification. It's, you know, it's a great article. You should read it. And he says basically that both the politicians and the activists of the Democratic media complex scurry to charge racism against President Trump and our nationalist movement, when in reality, they themselves employ brutally divisive political strategies buttressed by their own increasingly bigoted thinking. Basically, Steve is saying that they accuse us of bigotry and misuse words like racist in order to just mock and demean and defile us. And this guy, Ali, this is what Steve Cortez was talking about on Anderson Cooper. He had written an article, he had retweeted an article in its headline, and it said, "Trump is a racist, and if you still support him, so are you." Basically, Steve went after Ali for that. It's this whole broad condemnation of tens of millions of Americans is bigoted in and of itself, Steve says, and I agree with him. And what's really interesting to me is that this groupthink that the media has taken on, I think they've always had this groupthink, but with the advent of Trump and the Trump supporters gaining the White House, they've basically become obsessed with it. And the media itself, save Fox News and OAN, and even Fox News is tilting, the media has become an arm of the Democratic Party, an arm of the progressive left in some cases. And it really, to me, has become something of a farce. I think to many people, it's a farce. I can't imagine this, you know, kind of media when I was young. I mean, I remember when I was, you know, in my 20s, my first trip to CPAC, in fact, watching as people were giving speeches about buying CBS, about how the conservatives should buy the network where Dan Rather had been working. I mean, Rather was the worst of the worst, and still is. He's, you know, I wouldn't cross the street to put Dan Rather out if he was on fire. He's an awful person, completely bereft of morals. And we, you know, basically conservatives had gotten tired of it. We have basically said, listen, enough of this crap. We've had it. You know, let's buy. Let's just go ahead and buy CBS and see if we can build a conservative network. Fox was then born later. Nobody bought CBS, but it started back then. There was a survey in the 80s by Rothman and Lichter, professors, doctors, academics, that discovered, you know, they surveyed the leading members of the media and discovered that 80% of them, approximately, I don't remember the exact number, called themselves liberals. And this, you know, this grew and grew and grew. And I don't want to get too strange about this, but when I was watching my friend Anderson Cooper ridicule Steve Cortez and this guy Ali, basically, you know, calling him an Uncle Tom, he said, listen, Steve, no matter how hard you try, no matter how many butts you kiss, these racists that support Trump are not going to love you. Basically using that whole Uncle Tom analogy where everyone of color needs to think the same or you're just someone, you know, an Uncle Tom. It's, of course, disgusting, anti-intellectual, and offensive. Ali is an offensive character. If he believes that I'm a racist, I got some news for him. just because I support Donald Trump doesn't make me a racist. Donald Trump isn't a racist. I've known Donald Trump since 1988. Doesn't have a racist bone in his body. He might be indelicate. He might not be politically correct, but wah, wah, wah. You know, it's like, please let me send you a tissue. I'll send you a whole box of them, Ali. But this reminds me, I don't want to get too weird, but this reminds me of a guy named, a professor named Marshall McLuhan. M-C-L-U-H-A-N, for anybody who wants to look him up. He was a professor in Toronto who came up with the phrase, if you remember it, the medium is the message. The medium is the message. In fact, it really has come true. He actually predicted that the internet was going to displace traditional media. And, you know, people laughed at him back in the 60s. He wrote his book, Understanding Media, in 1964. He put out this kind of pop culture version of his theories. It was like a early graphic novel called The Medium is the Massage. The medium is the massage, like, you know, the rubbing on your back. In fact, the name of the book was supposed to be The Medium is the Message, but the typesetter had gotten it wrong, and he loved it. McLuhan loved it. He said, keep it, because the medium is also the massage. And he uses the word, you know, message to signify that, you know, that the medium itself is, it's the content and the character of the message. It means that the nature of the medium, you know, the channel through which a message is transmitted, is more important than the meaning or the content of the message. And it's, I think it's become true. And as I watched Anderson Cooper and this guy Ali, you know, mock Steve Cortez, a brilliant man, Steve. If you ever caught him on CNN or read any of his work, I implore you to read his work at Real Clear Politics. Very close friend of the president's too. You know, it said to me that Marshall McLuhan, his predictions in the 60s has become fact. You know, because the content, as he said, the content of any medium blinds us to the character of the medium. That's what I was thinking of. Because honestly, they are so dead set to destroy Donald Trump and everyone around him, people like me and my family, even investigating us falsely and forcing us to spend every cent in order to defend ourselves against a weaponized deep state. You know, it's just, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, these people lack character. They really do. They lack character. The MSNBCers, the Playboy. I mean, Playboy magazine reporter who mocked Trump supporters at the Rose Garden ceremony on the social media summit. I mean, that character is just scum. But I mean, these people, because they try and scream and rant and rave about things like these the president's tweets about the fake Russia hoax, etc. Because they're screaming and ranting and raving about that the content of what they're saying blinds us completely to the fact that they are absolutely bereft of character, all of them. If this guy Ali thinks it's funny to call Steve Cortez an Uncle Tom, I've got something for him. I mean, it's outrageous. And I'm completely disappointed in my friends in the media, real reporters, real journalists, not just entertaining scumbags like Ali, but becoming part of the problem themselves. In fact, the medium is the message. The medium is the massage. And all they're doing is massaging each other. And at what point does it end? At what point does America just say, enough of this stuff? Enough. I'm turning off my television. I'm throwing away the newspaper. I'm not going to read your magazine. Forget about your radio station. I'm done with you. I'm done. Because if you can sit there, Ali, and call a man like Steve Cortez an Uncle Tom, then you're scum. You're just scum. You lack character. You lack even something intelligent to say. Absolutely beyond the pale. And it's really disappointing to hear, to think that Marshall McLuhan was right all along. The medium is, in fact, the message. And what he predicted has become true. I'm going to reread some of McLuhan's stuff, and I think you should too. I mean, it's dated. It's from the 60s, but honest to God, he predicted all of this. He predicted all of this. The content of any medium blinds us to the character of that medium. They're so busy chatting about the Russia hoax and breathlessly reporting on non-facts, on fake news, and we're watching it so closely that we don't even realize they completely lack character. They completely, they're liars. They're losers. We should just turn it all off. I know I have. I've not been on TV for a while. I probably won't go on for a while. I've been invited on all the different networks on the 24th when special counsel, former special counsel, Robert Mueller is to testify before the House. And we'll talk more about that next week because it is next week. Maybe I'll pop into CNN from that. The good thing about Puerto Rico, though, is there aren't any studios here and the internet is so spotty that you really can't even do Skype interviews. It's hard to believe that in the 21st century, an island like this couldn't even put together a consistent internet signal anywhere. Anywhere. I don't know how people do business here. McLuhan was right. The medium is the message. And all you got to do is watch the segment with Anderson Cooper and Wajarat or whatever his name is, Ali, just absolutely mocking Steve Cortez, who didn't deserve it. Anyway, that's my podcast for this week. I went on and on and on about Puerto Rico. I hope it's interesting to you. It's certainly interesting to me. I know one thing, I'm staying away. I'm trying so hard to just walk the earth like Cain in Kung Fu. And in the morning when I walk along the beach, just enjoy some silence. You know, I haven't had silence in my life since Donald Trump came down that escalator in Trump Tower. A lot of us haven't had silence in our lives. And when I sit there on the beach with the sun coming up, enjoying the silence, the dead air, you know, it's really amazing that you discover what you discover in silence. You discover things that were there all along, in fact. I'm enjoying that. You have a great week. This is Michael Caputo for Still Standing. That's stillstandingpodcast.com.